Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello everybody, Andy Burt here. Thank you very much for joining us for episode 169 of the Early Excellence podcast. In this week's episode, we're joined by Kirsty Page as we discuss her school's development journey and the vital importance of the characteristics of effective learning. So here you go. Here's my Early Excellence podcast chat with Kirsty Page. Hiya, Kirsty. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Nice to see you. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. I do appreciate it, particularly when I know that you've got a busy role at your school and at your trust. And we're going to be talking about lots of different things, aren't we? We're going to be talking about the characteristics of effective learning. We're going to be talking about what you've done in terms of the work at the school around the characteristics, but also, interestingly, how you've built on that work from the EYFS onwards. So we've got lots to talk about. Before we get on to all of that, would you be able to give us a bit of an introduction to yourself, but also to the school and the trust that you work for? Would that be okay?
Of course, yeah. So my name is Kirsty Page. I am deputy head teacher at Gampton Church of England Primary School, which is a one-form entry primary school in between Paignton and Brixham. I work for the Academies of Excellence, and I've actually worked at Gampton for the past 19 years and worked my sort of way up, actually, from teaching assistant over the years. Now I'm deputy head. I'm also early years lead across our trust, which currently has 20 schools.
So it's quite a big trust then.
Yeah, growing. So we were one of the first schools to form, you know, part of the trust. And so we've been really fortunate, actually, that we've been in the trust from the very beginning, and we are the trust, and very much have been a part of growing, the growth of the trust, but also a part of the growing of the curriculum and embedding of that in our schools, which has been a really exciting time. And it's nice as the trust grows that actually, because we're one of the schools that have been in the trust for a long time. Also recently we had an Ofsted inspection last year, which graded the school as outstanding. And so that is also a nice way, you know, for us to share with others across the trust, and particularly the new schools that are joining, the impact that our curriculum is having.
Yes. And I imagine within that, that actually your role has changed quite a bit over that time. In that, on the face of it, you look at it and you think, well, 19 years, that seems like a long time. But actually, I would imagine during that time, it almost feels like you've had a succession of different roles. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think through what's been really nice for me is I do like a challenge. I'm quite driven and I like a challenge. So constantly, you know, it's been nice that my role has always sort of been evolving. And I was Kiso Dwan lead. I was a reception teacher, first of all, after being HLTA. And then I went into sort of a Kiso Dwan role, lead role, and I've then been leading across the trust on early years, and then started as deputy head here last September. So yeah, very exciting, and lots of opportunities. And that's another sort of plus to being in the trust, as well as there are lots of opportunities, and they have a talent management program, which has been really great. So, I've been able to tap into that in terms of professional development and supporting me to be able to move forward, which has been a real benefit.
Fantastic. Okay, let's get into then what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the characteristics of effective learning, which are already, anyway, one of my favourite things to talk about. I don't think we talk about the characteristics of effective learning enough, generally, across the EYFS. For those of you who are new to the early years, people who are listening, the characteristics of effective learning have been part of the EYFS framework for ages, for a number of years, almost as long as I can remember, really, which is brilliant in lots of ways, But at the same time, there is a danger there. And I think the danger is that because they're not new and shiny, they're not new with each framework, they kind of get a little bit forgotten if we're not careful. It becomes a little bit like wallpaper, that it's just there on the wall, or it's just there within the framework. And it kind of just gets ticked. It goes sort of, it's just ticking along, kind of, if you like, without us really kind of thinking about, well, do we do it well? Have we got it as part of our practice? Have we really got it central to our practice? And so when we had our initial call and you talked about the characteristics of effective learning, you know, my ears pricked up, because it's absolutely, I think, something we've got to talk about much more. So we're going to start from very much in terms of the EYFS and then build from that. So I know it's something you've done a lot of work on, okay, the characteristics of effective learning. Can you give us a starting point, first of all, for people who are new to the EYFS, on what we're talking about in terms of the characteristics? That would make sense, wouldn't it? Would that be all right?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. So you're absolutely right. So the characteristics of effective learning have been part of the early years framework for, I don't actually want to think how long, but years and years.
I think about, I'm guessing 20 years.
Has it been 20?
Roughly 20. I'm thinking 20 years, but I'm not sure.
Okay, so 20 years. There we go. And this very much, and I think it even through that time, it sort of evolved. Certainly, you know, when I think back to years ago in what it looked like in reception, it became almost, it sort of evolved into sort of thinking about how children learn. I think that's probably what the focus of it was, is the research was all about actually children learn in different ways and how can we understand how children are learning and develop that. So it might be that children, you know, are exploring, and through that exploration, this is how they learn best. And actually then you would then facilitate that child through giving them more opportunities. I think for me, what happened with the characteristics of effective learning is that actually in some schools, in some places, actually it became almost more of an assessment of children as well, because we were almost assessing them against them, but weren't always, the focus wasn't always on actually ensuring that children are progressing through those areas. It was almost like we would put them into one of those characteristics and go, well, that's how they learn. And it was almost like we accepted that's what that child did and that's what we promoted for that child. When, you know, I think through our curriculum that we use, we very much ensure that we're developing all areas of children's character. And I think that's been really important. I remember with characteristics of effective learning, we used to use things like dinosaurs. I don't know whether, I'm sure listeners that are early years practitioners would remember us using dinosaurs with the characteristics of effective learning, Explorosaurus and things like that became out of it. And of course, we always had to, you know, deliver, assess children against that and report that to parents at the end of the year how they were developing. And you're absolutely right. I mean, for me, that the basis of the characteristics of effective learning for me is all about character. It's all about developing children's character. And I think where, you know, I'm very fortunate being a part of the Trust, our curriculum, so the curriculum that we have at ACE is based on three core values. So that's academic excellence. So that's where your substantive and disciplinary knowledge comes through. And then the sort of explicit teaching of learning to learn, so the metacognition, and then cultivating a character. And our curriculum is not, it's quite unique in the fact that we actually equally weight those three parts of our curriculum. So character part of our curriculum, when we're thinking about characteristics of effective learning, is equally weighted to the work that we're doing on the academic, you know, the academic. So in terms of substantive and disciplinary knowledge. And so through the curriculum, for me, what we do is we focus on a particular character trait that we develop over a half term with children. And we do that across the whole curriculum in everything we do. And what we've done as a trust is we've actually ensured that that's progressive. So from our youngest children, and in some of our schools, we have preschools. So even from our children that are 2 years old all the way up to year six, there is a progression in that character. And I mean, the impact of that that we're seeing in terms of our year six is leaving, and as we, you know, as the curriculum has become more embedded, over the years, you're really seeing the impact of that work. And what's lovely for me as an early years practitioner is that, like you say, the characteristics of effective learning, we almost sort of paid tribute to that in early years in reception, but then they got into year one and it was almost like, well, that's forgotten now. We're on the national curriculum, off we go. So it was almost like the work that was done in reception was then lost. So the beauty of our curriculum at ACE is that actually we really value the importance of that. And so in terms of my role and in terms of early years and the work that we've been doing on the curriculum, our ACE early years curriculum, actually it's been a pleasure because it's all the things that I believe in as an early years practitioner, that the importance of developing children's character at a young age, but also knowing that when they leave reception, they're continuing that journey. It's not, we're doing that.
Yes, in, it's not, you know, just stopping.
Lip service to it.
Yeah, which is so key, isn't it? You know, I completely agree with everything that you're saying there. That I think you're right. I think quite often it's just seen as an assessment tool, when actually, if it's just an assessment tool, I think there's so much more that you could do. For example, if we just see it as something that we're reporting to parents on, or that we are using to report to the next teacher on, then we miss out on how you can use the characteristics of effective learning to, well, first of all, that they're not just a sort of, well, this is what they are, this is how this child learns, or this is what this child is currently doing, but actually you can affect those characteristics. So children can develop those characteristics. You don't just, not either a great learner or not a great learner, you learn to learn, and that actually the experiences that you provide your children with and the opportunities and the opportunities to be autonomous, or the opportunity to be independent, or the opportunity to shape their own ideas, or to be collaborative, that will shape those children's characteristics of effective learning. It's not just one thing, well, that's it, that, you know, that's how they learn, or that's where they're at as a learner. You can shape it, you can mold it. In the same way as we learn to do other things and we learn skills and knowledge, we can learn to learn. And I think that is something that we don't really do. From my point of view, we don't do as well. We talk a lot about knowledge and skills. We don't talk a lot about learning to learn as a journey in quite the same way. And what I was interested about what you were saying is that actually you're very much seeing it as a journey. The other thing that I think interests me here, and it's maybe something we could talk about a bit later on, but certainly something that I think really interests me, is that when we're talking about the characteristics of effective learning, we tend to focus in on the children in terms of the characteristics. And that, of course, is true, you know, and absolutely right, that's what we do. We're talking about the children's characteristics at the end of the day. Of course we are. However, what we often miss is that the learning environment has an impact on those characteristics. And that therefore, if we link the two together, we can actually create almost like an audit tool of our practice. So we can stand in our room, we can have a look around us. Where do you see children exhibiting certain characteristics? Is it in certain areas of provision more than others? So do you see lots of problem solving in the paint and the workshop, for example? Do you see lots of high levels of engagement? Do you see involvement? Do you see all of those different sorts of things? If so, great. But then having a look around the room, are there other areas where you don't see those things? Now, is that because of is that the children in that area, or is that area not giving the children that opportunity to show those characteristics? Now, those are hard questions, aren't they? But I think we don't look at that in enough depth, in my opinion, to get to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, I still very much, I think that one of the pieces, you know, a lot of the work that I do in terms of my early years role is, you know, I always look at the environment. I think for me, in the early years, an enabling environment is, you know, an extra adult. I always say it's an extra adult in the room, because actually if your environment is right, then actually, you know, actually it's providing all those opportunities for children to take risks, to be curious. So all the things we're talking about in terms of character as well. And I think, and Andy, what, you know, in terms of our curriculum as well, what I always think is we're still, you know, obviously very true to the early years foundation stage and all of that great research and practice, which is so important, and the environment being right, ensuring that you're constantly reflecting on those areas. So I think that's part of, you know, our practice as well, is very much that we would reflect. And I think that like you say, I think sometimes actually it can be a cohort. So it can be actually this cohort actually are really struggling in this area. They're not using it how I'd expect them to be using it. But then that's very much down to the, you know, the teacher to be going, actually, this isn't working the way I want it to work. How can I adapt it? Or is it that the children need explicitly teaching how to use it? Is it because they're struggling with determination? And that's where our curriculum is so great, because we, you know, I would expect to see lots of, through any early years environment, you would expect to see opportunities for children to develop character, to be, you know, more independent, to be curious, to challenge themselves, all of those things. But I think because we focus on explicitly teaching children those character traits, that actually we know our children. So it almost works quite well, because it's almost like the two meeting together in a way. I feel like it's almost, I don't mean to say an intervention, but you know where you can see young in early years, you see children that, a cohort of children that particularly struggle with determination or resilience, or it might be courage. It might be that you have a group of children that actually really don't like to take risks. They find speaking in front of people really daunting and all those things. So, you know, then you would adapt your environment. You'd be thinking about how you could exemplify that character trait for them. I think it's almost all of that combined, which gives you the most impact.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I'm also interested, was there a particular starting point for this work? Because it's obviously something that you've looked at in real depth and across the whole trust. And I just wondered, was there a moment, was there a spark, was there a point where you thought, as a trust, or maybe as an EYFS within your own school, that you looked at it and you thought, do you know what, we've really got to get back to looking at those characteristics. Was there a moment, a starting point, or did it just evolve?
I think what happened is the trust's curriculum, you know, as I said, our core values, sort of when that was developed, and that was, you know, very early on in terms of the eighth curriculum, actually, you know, from an early years point of view, and we developed, and I was part of the team that worked on the ACE curriculum for early years. So we have an ACE and early years curriculum, and we now have one actually, which I launched back in the autumn term for our preschools, which is really exciting. So our curriculum now starts from our two-year-olds, which is really exciting. And I think always very much we start from looking at research and thinking about, so we always start from a research evidence-based starting point. But I think for me, knowing the earliest foundation stage and knowing the characteristics of effective learning, but then looking at this curriculum and going, oh, hang on a minute, this actually does everything we want it to do in terms of what the early years foundation stage does, but actually we're explicitly teaching children how to learn. So the metacognition aspect of that, you know, we use things like the plan, do, review model, for example, which I use a lot with my children in reception. And so from a very early age, they're learning actually when they go into a building area or wherever they're going into the art, you know, construction, it could be that they're looking at wherever they're going, even in terms of writing, that actually they're already starting to think, oh, what am I going to do in terms of that planning stage? Then they go and do it. And then that all important evaluation, that sort of review stage, which is, okay, how did that go? Did it go the way you thought it would go? Did it go better than you thought it did? How could you improve it next time? What would you do differently? And so from, you know, even 4-year-olds, it's amazing how quickly they start to think that way. And actually, you know, all the evidence shows that using models like that, teaching children that there's metacognitive tools from an early age, does lead to successful learners. And that's ultimately what we want for our children. And so actually, I think that combination of the character, the metacognition, alongside the academic excellence, I think the curriculum that ACE have developed, our trust, very much almost does everything that the early years foundation stage, you know, in terms of, but it's actually it does so much more, because we're developing all those skills from 4, but we're built on from 2 in our preschools, but we're building on that. It doesn't stop. And I think for me, that part, it's that, you know, and I'm sure that lots of reception teachers, early years practitioners will be listening and thinking, that's really hard, isn't it? When you put all that work into those characteristics for children, Like you do all the sort of foundation work, and then they hit the national curriculum and it almost stops. Or we pay lip service, you know, where you know, schools have, or they have values, or they have things that they, but do they, are they actually explicitly teaching that? Is there a progression in that? Is that something they're seeing impact on across the school? So I think for me, this, you know, the starting point was very much that actually when we looked at the ACE curriculum and the core values of the curriculum, that for me, that was everything that you would want to be doing as an early years, as a reception teacher, as an early years practitioner. It's everything you would want to be doing for your youngest learners in order for them to really build upon that and become, you know, be leaving you at primary school with all the skills and attributes that you want them to be leaving you with in an ever-changing world. And I think, you know, it's so important now that we're not just focusing on the academic part, because, you know, technology, everything's moving so quickly that actually children's character, we only have to look at mental health figures as well and things like that. So developing children's sort of character is such an important part of our role and our jobs in education.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. What struck me as well when you were talking, and you focused in on that particular example of using plan, do, review as a way of supporting children's characteristics of effective learning, which is absolutely right. You know, I think if you're ever going, if there was ever one thing I think that can really help practice for everybody, it is that structure, that plan, do, review structure. It sounds so simple, doesn't it? That actually you put something in place that actually doesn't take that much time, you know, at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day, and then really engaging in what the children are doing. It doesn't take that much time out of your day. You know, it doesn't change your timetable dramatically, really. And yet the impact of it is absolutely tangible, I think, in a relatively short period of time. Because, of course, you can then, as adults, you can then engage with what the children are doing because they've told you what it is that they are wanting to do and wanting to achieve. You're in a better place. You're not just observing from afar, but you are actually engaged in what they're doing because you've connected with them right at the start of the day about what they're wanting to do. But also you've given them a signal right from the very beginning of every single day. You've given them a signal that what they do and what their ideas are, that that's important to you. That it's not just about, listen to what I'm telling you. If you go into the sand today, I want you doing this. And if you go into the water area, I want you doing this. And if you go into the dough area, I want you doing this. It's not that. It's a different dynamic where you're saying to them, what is it that's your idea? What's valuable to you? What do you think you're going to need when you go into those areas? If you haven't got everything you need, what do you need to do? Who might you ask? You know, all of those sorts of things. And then be ready to come back and tell us all about it at the end of the day. You've got a lot there of those characteristics ticked off. The collaboration, the problem solving, the engagement, the having their own ideas, those carrying those ideas out. There's enjoying achieving what they've set out to do. That's my favorite one of them, really, I think. Enjoying achieving what you've set out to do. You're really celebrating that through giving it time. And yet you're not giving it. You don't have to give it hours and hours. You're talking about little subtle changes to the timetable and the way that you do things that can have a maximum effect in terms of those characteristics. The other thing that struck me about that as well is that the best early years practice is holistic. And so it's not just the characteristics of effective learning that through something like that, that you were doing, it's not just that, that you're ticking, because you're also, of course, on a regular basis, you're inviting your children to talk about something that interests them. And so even if it's just within short 5-minute bursts at the beginning and ends of a session, you're inviting them to talk about something that they are an expert in. And so it's also going to have an impact on communication and language as well. Now, there aren't many things that you can come up with that will have that much of an impact on the characteristics of effective learning and communication and language and provide an insight into your children's lives. I think plan, do, review is wonderful. And I would, I'm a big advocate of it. I think it makes such a difference to practice, without a doubt, without a doubt.
It does. And I think, you know, it's always the tool, that the metacognitive tool that I always introduce first in the autumn term. And I've actually developed sort of my own sort of circle, which is quite child friendly, which you know, we then display in different areas of provision so that the children have it as a visual prop.
Brilliant.
And very much, although we explicitly teach it in the autumn term, you know, by the end of the autumn term and certainly into the spring term, the children are so independent in using that, and it becomes where you gradually step back from needing to support the children in that process. And what's really lovely is then you see that then, you know, doing that independently, you hear them talking to their friend. So they've done, you know, they might be building a boat or something, and then, you know, at the end they can hear them going, oh, but this, you know, actually this part wasn't quite the way, and you can hear those conversations happening. So you're absolutely right in terms of it does, you know, hit all parts of the curriculum. It's that self-regulation as well for children, and then from, you know, that very early stage starting to already understand their own next steps in their learning, and knowing that actually they're not just producing something and that's it, I've done that, I've made a boat, I've done that, that's it, tick off. And I think that's so important for children, that they understand that actually they can always improve, there's always things we can do better, there's always ways, there's always different things, you know, and it's developing that and giving them that sort of intrinsic motivation to want to explore things more and take things further. And not just being set with, okay, I've done that, tick it off, it's done. And that's very much in, you know, and also that's part of ensuring that in our environments and in our enhancements, that they're very open-ended so that children can see beyond that. And along with what you said, Andy, as well as being child-led, you know, sometimes. So, of course, we've got our curriculum and we have our enhancements and things we want to do with the children, but those plan, do, review moments in construction and art and things, it's so important that children come with their own ideas. It's very much, you know, when adults are going, this is what I want you to do, we're imparting that onto the you know, to children, instead of letting them be have that independence of creativity, which is, of course, what we want for children.
Yes, absolutely. And like you say, it does rely on the materials and resources that those children have access to as well. So that, you know, if the materials and resources are open-ended enough for those children to have their own ideas and for the resources to not be limiting, then that is key too. But certainly, I think having the opportunity to talk it through has such an impact. What always strikes me about that as well is that it provides real opportunity for challenge, in that you can then, you know, at the end of a session, if a child's been saying to you, well, we were building ships, you know, as you just said, you know, they were building a ship and this happened, this is what it looked like. You know, you've then got the opportunity to carry on that conversation, haven't you? At the end of the session, in the review bit, you can talk about, well, did you know about quite a famous ship called the Titanic? You know, and you can talk about that, and you can completely open up this conversation to, did you know about this? Or have you ever seen this? And there's so many things you can extend. There's so many ideas you can extend that kind of feed back into the children's ideas, that actually the next time they come back to it, they might extend it further. It's really, I think, really powerful stuff. Really powerful. Now, I can almost hear people who are listening at home, sort of as they're listening at home or at school, kind of thinking, well, as you said earlier on, you're doing all of this wonderful work within the EYFS. You've developed those characteristics, you've developed your environments to support the characteristics, you've got the plan, do, review structure up and running. The next question is, of course, what happens next? Because as you said earlier on, what often happens is you get to the end of the early years and so many things, from even fairly straightforward things like kind of art materials and expectations around independence, and other things as well. So many things we start in the early years that then kind of drift off into key stage one, and then drift off further as the children get into key stage two. And so the next question is, what happens next for you? And what did that journey look like? You know, what did the journey look like in terms of developing it further?
Yeah, I mean, the journey has very much been that, you know, as we've implemented the curriculum across the school and started to develop that further and further, so we're seeing more of the impact. And I think for us, we're in a really nice position now, because we feel that actually we're really seeing so much more impact of the curriculum, because we're now in a position where children have gone all the way through with the ACE curriculum. And so what as I spoke about earlier, I think for me, being in early years practitioner and being so in love with foundation stage and all the work that we do in terms of setting children off on their journey, what's been lovely is that actually it doesn't stop. All of that holistic work that we do, all of that sort of, you know, developing character, the learning to learn, and so with the curriculum it continues. So with our curriculum, there is a progression. It doesn't feel that, and I think before as well, we've always talked about the early years and the reception sort of year very much feeling separate. I know that lots of people have always said, oh, it's such a jump, it feels so different. And then there's all those conversations around, are children ready for year one? And then the year one teachers are saying, are, you know, the children ready for year, you know, and there's that sort of always those cross conversations, aren't there? And so it's like, well, are the children ready for year one? And then it's like, so are the reception children teachers getting them ready for year one? And then the year, it's that. And then the reception teachers are saying, well, hang on, are you ready for the children? And I know that's been an ongoing debate, hasn't it, around sort of that transition, particularly because we're going into the, you know, the national curriculum in most cases. So for me, and I think, you know, across RA schools, I think what's so lovely is that we don't have that because our curriculum continues. So actually the work that we're doing is progressive. The work that we're doing in the foundation stage, those metacognitive tools that we teach. And so we talked about plan, do, review, but there's, you know, we teach six across the year. We explicitly teach one of them is an emotion wheel, which has been amazingly, you know, that's had a massive impact on practice in terms of children being able to recognize their own emotions and talk about those and things like that. So we're developing children's reflective, you know, even from reception, we use reflective questions with children. We develop their reflections. We introduce metacognitive tools alongside developing the character. And you'll notice I'm actually talking about this more than the academic knowledge and skills. We do a lot of that as well. But I think what I'm trying to emphasize is that we very much equally weight that. And I think that's what is probably different. And so what we then, because that is the same across our curriculum, it continues. So when they go into year one, it's exactly the same. They're building on all of the work that we've been doing in the foundation stage. It doesn't stop. So in terms of the metacognitive tools, they'll be introducing more, but they will also have that bank of tools that they've learned in reception that they can lean upon and use independently. In terms of the character, we still focus on those particular character traits that we might have a particular focus on each half term. But there is also progression within that. So we have progression statements under it. So what it looks like in reception and what we're looking for and how we're developing it. And then that progresses into year one. By the time they get to year six, you know, that progression in the character trait has gone so much that they're doing so much more. So you can really see that developing as children go through the school. And in terms of sort of that metacognition, we look at that through sort of independence, creativity, and collaboration, and we focus on those as well. And again, through our curriculum, you know, you see children that progression through the school. So I think, you know, your question to me is how does that work? I think for me, it's so almost seamless because the curriculum has been sort of created in such a progressive way that actually it feels like they're just continuing on that journey very much, which is actually very satisfying when they leave you because you know that they're not stopping what, you know, the work that you're doing.
And it's very much a smooth transition in that way then, isn't it? And the children are, because what often is the very difficult thing is that you go from the EYFS then, of course, into Key Stage 1, and it's almost like the practice is two completely different things, you know, that you go from, in some settings anyway, you certainly go from something which is quite play-based and very much about hands-on experiences to something which is pretty much the opposite, and that you go from, you know, from one to the other within a six-week period of having that summer break, you switch teaching and learning styles quite rapidly, really. Whereas what you're talking about is something that actually is much smoother as a transition, and that where you've still got challenge and increasing challenge and increasing opportunities to do a range of different things that link to the Key Stage 1 curriculum, you're talking about building on something that is familiar to them in terms of how they go about learning. Am I right? Is that right?
Absolutely. And I think I sort of, you know, I said earlier, I think sometimes people talk about their curriculum, they talk about the work they're doing. And it's, you know, we live this, we live and breathe it, we believe, you know, in it, we can see the impact of it. And when I talked about how we start off developing children's independence in early years, and we build on that. So through the school here, we have independent learning spaces. So as the children go through the school, they can choose where they do their learning. So we live and breathe, you know, we don't say that we are developing, we do this. So this is our practice here, is very much that actually if children want to go and sit outside in the library or go into, we've got a space in the school called, we call the think tank. And if children feel that actually that's where they'll do their learning best, then you will see that. So quite often you might walk through the school and you'll see a mixture of year two children, year four children, maybe a couple of year six, you know, that have chosen that actually this is where I am though to do my work in the best way. This is where I'm going to be the most productive. This is what's going to help me think a little bit deeper about my learning. And so that's the impact of the curriculum, is that children can really self-regulate. They're able to, they know how they learn best. And that we're ensuring that, you know, and as important it is when we talk about an enabling environment in terms of the early years, actually we're ensuring that we also got an enabling environments through the school as the children progress, and that they're still able to have that independence of choice of going, actually this is where I will be most successful in my learning, to go and do that. Obviously they can't choose to just go off out of the class all day long, but at those moments where actually you know they can go and do that. And I think we do live out what we believe, you know, we believe in our curriculum. And it, yeah, though that's one example of what you would see.
Yeah, it's, which I it's think is providing a degree of flexibility, isn't it? In order that actually those children can, in the same way as you talked about earlier on for the EYFS children with the plan, do, review structure, that actually that's starting them on a journey of then knowing the best ways to do things. And that if they're wanting to carry this out, how might I best go about it? Who will I work with in order to do it? What resources will I need? Where in school am I going to be in order to do that? And that with the place where I can learn best and engage best. It's a progression of something that you clearly start early on and you build on that in an appropriate way. That it doesn't always look exactly the same in the same context, but there is a clear progression there of skills, but also attributes as well. It's not just a progression of skills, it's a progression of attributes. And I think that's key. I think that, as I said earlier, I think that's something that we often miss, is that actually you've got to really think about how children are going about learning, not just within the early years, but actually beyond that as well. A number of things struck me about what you were saying. I think you said earlier on about how that there is still, of course, that level of academic challenge as well. And I think it was interesting when you said that, because I think quite a lot of people do, particularly sort of in Key Stage 1 and maybe beyond, that if you are looking at the characteristics of effective learning, or if you look at those other attributes, if you like, that there's a sense that people might go, well, but we've got to get the children to hear, you know, kind of thing. We've got to get them here for SATs, or we've got to get them here in terms of the end of Key Stage. Whereas, of course, the two things go hand in hand. You know, children don't learn and develop and make progress effectively if they don't have the learning attributes. You know, it's not one or the other. You don't focus on the kind of the academic skills and then have half an hour on the characteristics of effective learning. The two have got to be intrinsically linked, haven't they? They've got to be absolutely linked together, so that when the children are making progress, you know that that progress that they're making is the best progress they could have made because they were completely engaged in what they were doing. The tricky thing for me is that quite often, if we don't talk about the characteristics of effective learning enough, then whilst children make progress, you can't ever, if you're not really looking at the characteristics, if they make progress, you can't ever be completely certain that that's the best progress they could have made, unless actually you know they're at a high level in terms of the characteristics of effective learning. If so, that's the best they could have done. It's a bit like the work of Ferrer Lavers with the high levels of involvement and high levels of well-being, that's when children learn best. If children are making progress, but high levels of well-being and involvement are not there, they're actually not making the best progress they could have made. It just struck me from what you were saying. You're absolutely spot on that the two are linked together.
Oh, absolutely. And we know, we can see through our outcomes that the impact the curriculum has had in terms of the academic outcomes. And actually, historically, we probably, a child is struggling in maths, for example, and you put an intervention into place and you go. But sometimes that can be a character. It can be that actually math, so much of maths is around problem solving, isn't it? And there's, there can be lots of answers and lots of ways of getting to that. And that, you've got to be resilient, actually, to be able to overcome those problems. And actually, sometimes it's that the child needs is the intervention. It's the resilience work. It's the fact that instead of going, I can't do this, I can't, it's actually, what is it? Can they not do the maths, or is it the resilience they need more support with? And actually, when you look at that and you're looking at actually that child and seeing what is the barrier for that child, quite often it can be character, it can be that's holding them back, or they're not really understanding how, that learning term in terms of the metacognition as well. They really understand themselves as a learner? Do they really understand the way they can, move themselves forward? Have they got all the tools to be able to support them in that way? And so that in turn has such an impact on their academic progress, because you're fixing those things that are, intrinsic for that child.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes complete sense. Absolutely does. So we'd better draw things together, because I'm just aware you're a very busy person. I'm taking up a lot of your time. But just before you go, we put together one final thing that I was going to ask you, and that was basically what's next. So, you've worked on so many different things over a number of years. You've embedded such a lot of practice around the characteristics of effective learning across the school and across the trust. So what's next? What's coming next for you?
So I think, as a trust, and I know that our deputy CEO and one of our head teachers is involved in lots of sort of national groups working towards, I think we're very much thinking about assessment. I think that's very much our next step in terms of looking at things where I talked to you about those interventions where we would put in something for a mass. I think what we've been looking at, thinking about is when with academic knowledge and skills, there are lots of sort of assessment procedures in place, but we're not always assessing or thinking about how are we assessing children's character, how are we assessing how they're learning to learn. And so I think for us, we're looking about how can that assessment, how can that look in our curriculum, and how can that sort of marry together with our thoughts around that equally weighting of the curriculum. And so we're very much looking at that. We don't have all the answers yet. We're looking at it. We're ensuring that we're looking at all research and thinking about that. But I think we want to be, one of our trust values very much about innovation, being innovative. And we want to be on, always thinking about the next thing. And I think for us, very much, we want to be, ahead of the game in terms of that assessment. I know that that's the case for a lot of schools. A lot of people are looking at assessment. I think that some of the assessment systems that we've got in education are a little bit old-fashioned, and we're not always looking at all the right ways. And so it's about thinking outside the box. And I'm really confident and excited about what they come up with, actually, and how we look at that in the future. So I think that's sort of one of our focuses at the moment, is thinking about what does that look like and how can we ensure that that is really, very innovative and very ACE, and marries very well.
Something that fits what you want it to do. So it's not just something that's off the shelf, because actually, from what you've been talking about, that actually you've been very much hands-on in creating something that fits you as a school and as a trust in terms of your curriculum. And that having done that, you want an assessment process that fits that, that doesn't get in the way, that isn't clunky, that doesn't stop you doing what you want to do, but enables you to track, enables you to get to know, enables you to show the progress in lots of different ways that isn't about kind of changing the practice, but about the assessment fitting that practice. That I think will be key, won't it? Yeah. Sounds really interesting, really exciting. It sounds like a bit of a watch this space kind of thing. It sounds very exciting indeed. Thank you so much for joining us, Kirsty. It's been brilliant to chat to you. It really has been really interesting to get, to have that insight into what the work that's been going on there. And it sounds fascinating. And do stay in touch. It'd be good to hear how you get on with the assessment as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
So there you go. Thank you very much to Kirsty for joining us for this week's episode of the podcast. And of course, to you people for listening along as well. That's about it from us. Have a good week, everybody, and we will see you next time.